Oh, did you get cheer wine? What'd you get?
I got a shake dog.
Oh, fuck. Dude, you know.
I got a blueberry cheesecake shake dog.
I'm going to be completely honest. I come off as a Northeast elitist ever. I fucking love the South. I love the people. I love cookout. I love just so much about the South. Cookout's
changed. Do you remember it was like $5 a tray? It's like $8 now.
I could not give a single fuck. they've been underselling cookout for years. It should have been $8 when we were there back in 2014.
Yeah, it should be like $15 now. I also spilled shake all over myself.
Okay, let's get the pod started. 3, 2, 1. Hey, I'm Kevin Pettit.
And I'm Martin Fraser.
And we are Loud Americans Discussing Soccer, better known as Lads. Today is Tuesday, February 28th, 2023. And Martin, Manchester United has won the thing. They've won something. It is massive. Not since 2017. Their first official piece of silverware in the cabinet. It is the Carabao Mickey Mouse Cup, League Cup. But who cares? Who cares? Because you know who hasn't won any silverware? Tottenham still. anyway, yeah. Congratulations, by the way. Beating Newcastle 2-0.
Yeah. You know what? We won the Manchester City trophy. I it feels awkward calling it the League Cup trophy because it's not the League Cup anymore. It feels weird as shit to call it the Carabao Cup because I'm not calling a goddamn trophy an energy drink trophy. And so, yeah, super, super happy. I think this kind of sums up my reaction to us winning a trophy for the first time since 2017, like Kev said, but also kind of.
I can't make that joke anymore. I can't be like, yeah. Oh, you haven't won something in like 6 years or whatever.
We finally got it. But I also want to, I want to not stray too close to the sun like Icarus. I don't want to be like a crazy fan. We got a trophy. I want to realize that this is the poop trophy. This is the League Cup trophy. This is the Manchester City trophy.
Which we make fun of Man City each year for winning. Like
every single year. So
nice
I
one, guys.
I don't want to get it twisted. I do want to stick to my guns and recognize that this is a worthless trophy. So this statement right here kind of encapsulates, if you will, encapsulates. I'm learning a lot of new terms because I'm dealing with lease renewal bullshit at my house. Anyway, this kind of encapsulates how I'm feeling right now. I'm happy. I'm happy with that trophy, but I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied. And that's how I want every single player to go out. And Erik ten Hag kind of embraced that mentality. He was called in after the game. We'll get to the game in a second, but he was called in after the game. He gave his presser and he left the Carabao Cup trophy on the press desk. He just left it there. To the point where journalists had to be like, hey, Erik, your trophy. Hey, Erik, don't forget your trophy.
Mr. Hogg, get back in here.
Yes. And he quipped, oh, I'm already on to the next trophy. And that is exactly the mentality I want.
That's some mic drop shit. That's some good shit. On to the next one. Yeah. That's quadruple is still in play.
That's right. Except no. We'll get the bullshit triple because we're out of the Champions League. We'll get the Europa, the FA Cup, the Carabao Cup. Maybe we'll get the Premier League.
No. I knew you were in the – I guess someone did talk about that. Then why did ESPN tweet that? I saw ESPN tweeted that.
You've got fucking idiots on Liverpool and Manchester City saying they've won the quadruple and they've won like the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup, and the Premier League. And they're calling itself the treble.
The domestic
quadruple is not a fucking thing. Stop creating new things. A treble is a treble. Manchester City fans, you have not won the fucking treble. Stop it.
Not even
stop
Europe.
Inventing. Yeah. So, stop inventing new terms.
Maybe start with Europe and then, you know, anyway. Yeah, I guess we can get into the game. Eddie Howe and the boys had to gear up with Karius, unfortunately, because Pope, was out and Dubravka was, you know, from Manchester United. So he had Karius, who honestly was not only rated the best player, I thought he was actually pretty good in this match, which is kind of funny. He had some pretty spectacular saves, Karius did. But it turned out to be a who else but your star signing getting the first goal, Casemiro, you know, who's been not only Ten Hag, but the combination of Ten Hag and Casemiro has been beaten to death, but again, is shown at the in a cup final is massive. And then obviously you have Rashford, who when he sees the ball, he scores this season. There's actually been arguments that is he the best informed player in the world right now? Which I
yeah, and
I think there is a great argument to that. I think we talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like to put caveats on shit like that. Because obviously in my head, there are a couple Manchester United players right now that I think right now in form are the best in their position in the Premier League. And I might even go outside and say maybe they're the best in the Champions League group or the Europa League group. But I'm not going to go full front and center and say this Manchester United squad is the best or one of the best teams in Europe right now, because there is a lot of growth to be had for this squad. In this game itself, I don't think Manchester United played very well. If you watch, you know, the Manchester United game against Barcelona earlier this week, you watched the first leg last week, you watched the game against Brighton this past weekend. I think Manchester United played with a lot more intent and a lot more cohesion and accuracy than they played against Newcastle this Sunday. But when push comes to shove, and this is what the best teams do, and Kevin and I will preach this until they die, best teams in the world win games they're not supposed to. They win games they do not look the best at. And, you know, we can go throughout the calendar year and look at examples just this year of Arsenal winning games they were not supposed to on paper. Manchester City has a good 5-year record of winning games they did not look great at. The whole reason Liverpool won the Premier League that season is because they won every single fucking game they could, even if they were dog shit. And this, I think, is a hallmark of a great team, a growing team, where they win games like this. It's an ugly win, but the way that
Ten Hag has essentially used like the Disney Fast Pass with this fucking team is incredible. The way that it took Arteta, what, we're on year three, to get to where we're competing for a title, where you guys, he comes right in. The elimination of Ronaldo was an addition by elimination. And the way that he's been able to revitalize some of these different players' careers. I mean, it's just unbelievable what he's been able to do with some of these players who we've kind of either written off or we're like, oh, that's their ceiling, they're done, whatever. So,
yeah. And I want to say that while what you said is wholly true, that he has physically improved these players on the pitch, I think, you know, this is kind of one of those untouchable things with management. He has that it factor. He has that factor where a player is going to go out and throw themselves against the wall for him no matter what. And that's very rare. Jurgen Klopp embodied it in the recent times. Sir Alex Ferguson, in my opinion, was the pioneer of players going out and throwing themselves against the wall for that manager. And I think Ten Hag has that. And we've talked about it before in terms of his discipline and his standard level. At Manchester United, it is a red line in the sand. If you drop below it, you are in trouble. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how good you are. So I think first and foremost, the physical standard has increased under Ten Hag, but I think the mental stature has increased exponentially, where we don't go out and just lollygag around the field anymore. We don't go out thinking that we're Manchester United anymore. We go out and we fight for that badge. And even if we're having a shite game, one of our friends, Dom, texts me, what is the point of Wout Weghorst? Wout Weghorst, and Kev brought this
also,
point up.
Also, like, how could you hate this guy? I mean, it's easy to meme about him being like, he hasn't scored any goals, but he's a very likable player. That picture of him after winning his first ever piece of silverware, like taking it all, essentially in awe and like almost like choking up on the pitch. It's such a great photo. Like, how could you hate this guy?
And that's what soccer should be. And honestly, that's, you know, why I love soccer. I talked about it a couple pods ago. I mean, Manchester United, the success of Manchester United is why I fell in love with soccer, because it transcends just regular ass soccer. And so you look at players like Wout Weghorst, who has never won anything, but, and he has never scored a goal for Manchester United. That means anything. He's got a couple of assists, but he does that dirty work with a fucking smile on his face. And he doesn't give up. He doesn't fade. He does that dirty work because he knows the level of squad he's playing with. He knows the coach he's playing with, and he's given it his fucking all. And so it's those players. Even players like, you know, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who was written off. He's lazy. He'll never be good at attacking. Aaron Wan-Bissaka comes on at halftime and completely shuts down the right half of the field. And
Saint it's that Maximin, level. More like Saint Minimum.
Ooh, got him.
That was from Twitter. That wasn't me.
I love it. I love it. It reminds me back in the Jake Cone days. Got him.
Got him. Yeah. Saint Minimum. It's good, but I think we can do better.
Also, I do want to give credit where credit is due, because I think, like I said, Newcastle was the better squad. On the pitch, they were the better squad. Newcastle, I mean, same kind of thing that Erik ten Hag has done. Eddie Howe has done. I mean, he has improved this team beyond what we thought was capable for this Newcastle ceiling with the current level of players they have in their squad. I mean, Kev, you and I were saying
in a cup final.
I
don't know if you saw this picture, but he had hanging up in the Newcastle facilities that it was a banner or was on a screen saying that we have not won a domestic trophy in 67 years, just throughout the entire place, just to motivate and be like, hey, I mean, he got Newcastle in his like first year to a cup final. Yes, it is.
Exactly.
It is the Carabao mixed power drink cup title now. And like, it used to be more historic, like the FA Cup. I think the FA Cup, this is my like overrated, underrated. I think FA Cup's coming around to underrated.
I think FA Cup is going for full circle, and it's coming back up in its prowess and its legacy. I think the FA Cup's on its up and up.
I'm not going to give you League Cup, though. No.
No, I won't either. I'll be the first to admit that the League Cup is bullshit. But FA Cup.
But FA Cup. Back to underrated. It used to be super overrated. We don't care. I think it's back to underrated. I don't know why. I feel like the fans care more about it.
All right, Kev. This is the last thing I want to say about this Manchester United squad. Alluded this in the beginning of the episode, but here's my challenge to you. I want you to list a player that is better in current form than these four Manchester United players.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start off from the top. So Marcus Rashford, name a player in the Premier League that is better than
position.
Marcus Rashford.
At his position.
So strikers, true number nines. Let's go ahead and blank them out. So we're looking at wingers, either left or right wingers. I've got one Arsenal player that I would put up there. And I would also put Karim Benzema up there because I don't consider him a true striker.
Honestly, I'm just going to stick with just Premier League, to be honest, just because my European soccer knowledge is decent, but I've just been so honed in, especially because, you know, Arsenal are in a title race right now.
Right. So,
it's like, oh, there's other stuff going on, like, besides the Neymar getting hurt because it's his sister's birthday. That was, like, the biggest thing. And I'm like, oh, also Napoli might win a title. And also, like, Dortmund loses to that team, or not Dortmund, Bayer loses to... Mönchengladbach again, or whatever the team he loses again. I'm like, oh, some things I follow in Europe. Mostly I've been honed in on Premier League. Okay. Back to where we are. Rashford, left wing. I don't think there's anyone better in the Premier League at the moment. I think he is probably the best player in the Premier League at the moment. I guess people would say Erling Haaland.
I would disagree with that just because of the importance of the player in the squad. But I think Marcus is the best left wing. Yes. I'm going to drop it down. I've got two midfielders. First is Casemiro. I don't think it's possible to find a better center defensive midfielder that has brought what Casemiro has brought to a team.
Yeah, that is tough for me because I love Thomas Partey so much, but I'll probably...
What Cass has brought to this team, how he has completely changed the team.
Also, Partey has been out a couple games, so Casemiro, I feel, has been a little bit more consistent than Thomas. Yeah, I mean, there's also the Rodri case as well, but I think this is not as close. I think this is Casemiro, yeah.
All right, I've got two more.
Okay.
And one's going to be a weird one. Bruno Fernandes.
I guess you could make the case for Odegaard. I think
Yes, I didn't even consider him. Yes.
I think you can also probably make the case, I don't know, because where he plays, like Kevin De Bruyne hasn't exactly have been the great season, but then you see him turn up. Yeah, you have seen him turn up. So I'd probably give it to Bruno, but I mean, like, I'd probably have Odegaard over him.
I totally discounted Odegaard. And I think Odegaard, while we are on this topic, I think Odegaard really kind of mimics how Bruno plays, where Odegaard can float all over the place and direct the tempo and direct the ball from whether it's right wing or in a center attacking mid position. And it's really fucking awesome to see that.
They pop out of nowhere. That's one thing I want to say. Exactly. Like, during the Leicester game, which we'll get to, we're about to get into our Premier League coverage of the weekend, but it was so cool seeing Odegaard and just who I think is very similar to Bruno in that aspect, where they just pop out of nowhere and they like can really create so much of their own space. It's very cool.
Yeah. All right. Two more or one and a half more. Licha Martinez, my center back. I truly challenge you to find me a better center back other than maybe Varane right now. In terms of his tenacity,
maybe the best pairing. I think they're
together. Yeah. Let's do it that way.
Yeah, because Gabriel and Saliba, like I like Saliba a lot, but that Gabriel has given me a lot of heartache, like a lot of questions the past couple weeks. If we're going to Manchester City, I mean, I really rate John Stones, man. I rate him,
but I don't think he can operate by himself.
Yeah, but that's that makes sense. Like, but that's like his system, though, that he works with in Manchester City. I'm just looking up, like, let me see.
The only ones I can think of are Newcastle fucking center backs. Dan Burns, I think, is an excellent center back. Suter, I think, is an excellent center back. Fabian Schär, he was originally a center back, now plays right back. All excellent center backs. Obviously, you can look at Thiago Silva, who I think is, you know, hands down one of the best performing center backs in the past 2 years. But I think Licha Martinez and Rafael Varane, in terms of a pairing this year on form, in form, that's who I'm picking. Because like you said, Gabriel Friol, I'm seeing a couple fucking spaces in his games. I think Saliba is excellent, no doubt. And then you go to City, it just doesn't seem they have that consistency.
I mean, they're playing like a weird back three at the moment of like Akanji, who I think is Akanji has been very, very awesome. Good.
Love him.
And he's academy, right? Like, God damn it. Like,
no, he's from Belgium or some fucking shit.
I thought he wasn't there like a center back recently that they had. And I was like, oh, shit. They like
Rico, now, man, Rico Williams.
Oh, Rico Lewis. Yeah. He played in the midfield. Yeah. But like that back three, I mean, I think Ake is finally getting playing time and being like, oh, yes. Yeah. He's been very good. Akanji, Ruben Diaz, I mean, obviously, I think is very, very good.
Dortmund is where he came from. Dortmund. He's Swiss, but he came from Dortmund. Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I thought maybe because I'm thinking of.
No, Rico is Academy.
Academy. Yeah.
Rico, Cole Palmer, and they have some other fucking idiot. I must have
mixed them up. Fuck. Anywho. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go best pairing, then I'll probably give it to you. Yeah.
All right, here's my last shout. And I'm actually gonna go on a fucking 12-year tenure. David fucking De Gea. Finally getting the credit he deserves.
You lost me. I don't I'm just kidding. I think he's having a phenomenal season this year. He is still one of the best twitchy shot stoppers there is in the league. And you're
in terms of a pure goalkeeper. Let me kind of put some caveats on that.
I mean, it still has to be Nick Pope to me. Like, I mean, the fact that they still have the most clean sheets, they still have been. And I think there's an argument for Ramsdale. I think De Gea is at least now. Before I'd be like, are you joking or what are we doing here, Martin?
Right.
Now I'm like, okay, yeah, we can have a. Well, let's
there's sort a of comment dive. About it. There's a comment about it.
There's
it's not so outlandish. It's not like, oh, this jackass just likes Manchester United.
No. I mean, like, I think there's definitely a dialogue to be had there. So. Yeah, I mean, and you also got to at least give a shout to Ederson. I mean, again, like for some of these teams, they're not going to be facing as much action as other goalkeepers who we each year go.
All right, here's a unpopular opinion. I rate Alisson as the better keeper over Ederson 10 times out of 10.
Oh, definitely. Oh, most definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, out of the old Liverpool squad, I think Alisson hasn't really dipped at all. Like Virgil van Dijk has.
I agreed. I think Alisson is on his De Gea fucking curve in 2013 right now, where he came in with a decent fucking back line. He got solid for a year, and now he's just getting shit on by the likes of fucking Joel Matip, fucking Joe Gomez, Van Dijk, and Trent Alexander-Arnold literally playing against him, and he has stepped the fuck up.
And Fabinho, I mean, his fall off has been insane. Naby Keita, I mean, like one of the worst signings, you could say. They gave him the number 8 jersey, man. Like he was supposed to be. I mean, that I like a lot of the. I'm going to get on a whole tangent of Liverpool because I feel like there's a whole dialogue that could be say about the future of that club. So how about we just get into actually talking about? I think we've been talking a lot of big picture stuff. Let's talk about some of the matches this weekend and
let's zoom in.
Two of the teams who we haven't really mentioned yet, but I think this is the most important match of the weekend, was Tottenham versus Chelsea. 2-0 victory to Tottenham. Graham Potter sucks. Graham Potter is not a good manager. What I have noticed is that the players that have been signed have kind of gotten better, but all the previous players, like especially like Reece James, all these other players who have been at the club, who have been like a staple at the club since the Tuchel kind of time and that went to the Champions League final, they've all regressed massively. I don't understand what the hell is going on. I feel like everyone's being played at weird positions. I don't understand his game plan. It sounds like he's just like, yeah, no, we're still working it out. It's like, no, but you're losing.
And I feel like for a lot of this time, I have blamed the players themselves. And like Kevin and I have said multiple times throughout, you know, the years of this podcast, is it gets to a certain point where the blame has to fucking go on the captain of the ship. And so Kev just kind of pointed out the new age players versus the old age players under Graham Potter. And I think that's a very important consideration. Because if you look at the transfer policy, Chelsea has kind of always had. It hasn't really changed under the new leadership. Chelsea has always just gone out and poached anybody and everybody with a shred of fucking talent. That's what they've always done. And to be fair, they've always had coaches that can handle these types of talents. However, I kind of want to, put a couple things side by side. I want to put this, Chelsea team right side by side with the 2017 Manchester United squad, as well as a 2014 Arsenal squad, and just kind of compare the holdovers from a previous generation to this new age generation. So you have players like Ruben Loftus-Cheek. For my example, would be Jesse Lingard. For Kevin, it'd be a great example of Jack Wilshere, Aaron Ramsey in 2014, where, yeah, they have flashes of potential and they certainly in any fucking textbook, you would see them fucking grow. In any FIFA fucking career, you would see them grow to a 88, 89 fucking rating. However, these long stays of previous generations. So like I just said, Jesse Lingard, Paul Pogba, Chris Smalling, Phil Jones, players like that. So in this new age Chelsea, you got the Ruben Loftus-Cheeks of it. You've got the Reece James, who's a great player, but you got to recognize that he is a leftover from previous generations. You've even got the likes of, Hakim Ziyech. You've got Christian Pulisic. You've got a lot of fucking players who really don't have a plan at Chelsea. Their future is not at Chelsea. So you got to find
Ben Chilwell as well.
Ben Chilwell is an excellent fucking example. And then you've got a bunch of fucking stopgap players like the likes of Wesley Fofana. You've got the likes of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. You've got the likes of fucking João Felix. All these good players in their own right that do not mesh well with the system. So for me, this Chelsea squad is this perfect storm of old players hanging on for that paycheck, new players who do not mesh with the squad, brand new players who have that light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm looking at the likes of Enzo Fernandez. Kai Havertz is one of them, as well as Mudrick. And then you have this turmoil in the management with the American takeover. You have turmoil in the management with Tuchel getting pushed out, and Graham Potter being appointed when he's not truly ready for this. So for me, this is a perfect fucking storm of everything that could go wrong for Chelsea is going wrong. And right now, I don't think they have a plan to get out of it. So I think right now, Chelsea is in some serious fucking trouble.
I've heard the return of Jose Mourinho. That's been
honestly,
massive...
that's what they need. That is exactly what they need.
Apparently, because I think this is from our good friend Ravi from the Discord. He was saying that Roma is not giving Mourinho any financial backing. Again, this is all rumors. I don't know anything this to be true, but you know, he's a big Chelsea head, so I'll take his word for it. Yeah, I think he would be a great one. You know who would be an interesting one?
Antonio Conte.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he just, what do you want to go into this mess?
I don't know.
He just, I mean, we haven't even talked about Tottenham yet, but, Oliver Skip getting his first goal. Good for him. Harry Kane back on the score sheet again, having a very, very underrated season. If you're not a Spurs fan. I think when I've talked about how I don't know how to feel about this Tottenham squad, I feel like I'm more like 60% more positive, 40% negative. You know what I mean? I think I'm less on the 50-50, like what the hell is going on with them? Because we were talking about the table. They are in fourth place. They are in a Champions League spot, just 4 points behind Manchester United, which again, you guys have Manchester United have a game in hand. But I mean, this is a very confident season by Manchester United, and they're showing up for the biggest matches, it seems like. It's just, you know, the usual dum-dum matches. They're like, I forget how to play. And I don't know. I mean, to say that some of these players have just flourished under Antonio Conte would be taken lightly, like Kulusevski. I've love him and what he's been able to do up front. Richarlison, who still hasn't scored a Premier League goal for Tottenham.
Has he not?
No, wow. Zero, 60 million, no Premier League goals yet. But he has Champions League goals, which the comments keep reminding me, though. So I'm like, okay. Well, it'd be nice if he just anyway. But yeah, I mean, if we're gonna talk about in terms of game plan, I just thought Tottenham just kind of ran over them, and Chelsea had just seemed so disjointed and just unenthusiastic throughout this entire match.
Yeah, and I kind of want to hammer home the point Kev made, where this Tottenham squad has essentially proved to us in multiple competitions. Obviously, they lost the first leg against AC Milan in the Champions League 1-0, but I mean, I don't see any reason why they could not pull that first leg defeat around. In the Premier League, they have, you know, good stretches, good three-game stretches of victories. And then they'll lose and draw. So it feels like, looking at big picture, this Tottenham squad is kind of hard to dial in, kind of hard to predict weekend to weekend. But you can look at the big picture and say, oh, shit, Antonio Conte's got this squad heading in the right direction.
Also was not at the match. Sorry to interrupt. He was in surgery, but he should be back next week.
Good job. And I always get it a tiny bit fucking twisted between Antonio Conte and Sarri. And I almost wished him luck smoking even more cigarettes. But this is going to be my last manager shout for Chelsea, because I know he's done at the end of the season. What you think, what you feel about Diego Simeone?
I mean, yeah, I think that would be the perfect fit.
So, too. I think that would be the perfect fit for the circumstances, the team, the manager, and the players.
Yeah, it's been kind of funny because there's been a lot of stats that have come out about like how since João Felix has left Atletico, they've been on like a 5-game win streak, and Chelsea, you know, if you look at all Chelsea fans, don't do this. Do not go into a deep, dark dive about all the stats about you right now. It's like one goal since the new year. And like, I think
Marcus Rashford has scored more goals than Chelsea in the new year. So it's what bad.
The one was Real Madrid has scored more goals than England.
Yes. Yes.
Than Chelsea has this year.
And they did that in an afternoon. Oh, we'd be remiss not to mention that. Oof, what a backyard fucking
beating. I think we'll talk about that when we get to Liverpool, how they got smashed by Madrid after being 2-0 up. But
great game.
Also, was Jorginho right? Getting out of Chelsea, getting out of Dodge at the right time?
We talked about it. Like, this quite genuinely might be the one Chelsea to Arsenal transfer that makes sense and works for everybody.
He broke the curse.
He did it.
Is Jorginho, like, am I going to have to, like, go back and, like, redact everything I've ever said about Jorginho? I might.
Kev, you should just say Jorginho should get the Ballon d'Or in 2023.
I'll do it. If we win the Premier League, I'll say, yeah, he deserves it.
There you go.
I'll say it's transfer of the season. I'll make it that. How about Pochettino? One more shout. Pochettino to Chelsea? Or is that, how would you feel about that?
I feel like Pochettino should go back to Spurs. I feel like that was Pochettino's biggest career mistake. I feel like that was Tottenham's biggest career mistake. I think that they should, you know, talk it out, put aside their fucking differences, you know, take Tottenham out on a nice date night. Go get some fucking nice fucking filet mignon, get some nice charred broccoli, get some fucking garlic mash, get a little bit of gravy right on top of that. And then when the time is right, you pop that question. Hey, Mauricio Pochettino, you come back to Tottenham. Wow. You go from there. I think Mauricio Tottenham should be reunited. However, I think the best coach, I'm going to stand by this, the best coach for Chelsea is either Diego Simeone or Mourinho. They are the best coaches,
third,
in my opinion.
Third time's the charm for Mourinho.
Fuck it, dude. Come back.
How many?
I miss you.
Would that be the most times a manager has returned to the same club in the Premier League?
It's got to be. Like, I know Sir Alex has the longest tenure at a single club, but Mourinho returning to Chelsea is a story as old as God.
But I'm trying to think, like, how many times did West Brom call, like, Big Sam to come save them? You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, the relegation fodder teams that have been like, break in case of emergency, we need to get, you know, either Big Sam or Hodges or I don't know.
Ooh, okay. All right. I bet you I can name the coach who has moved around the most.
Tony Pulis?
I was going to say Roberto Mateo. Fucking Belgium, now the Portugal coach, who also coached Everton. He coached a bunch of fucking Premier League teams. Roberto Mateo's wrong. That was Chelsea's interim coach. Oh, fuck. Why can't I think of his name? I see his stupid rat face. Portugal's current coach is his current position.
I'm actually Googling which coach has coached the most Premier League teams. Let's see. This is great podcasting. We're both on our phones and laptop.
Roberto Martinez is who I speak of.
Oh, yes. It is Big Sam. Let's fuck.
Is it?
Go.
Yes.
You want to hear his list?
Yeah, let's hear his resume.
He has taken charge of 8 different clubs.
My man.
Bolton, Newcastle, Blackburn, West Ham, Sunderland, Crystal Palace, Everton, and West Brom. Wow.
Some fucking killers there, dude.
But now I want to figure out who has returned to the same club. I don't know if they have that stat online. Who has returned to the same club as the manager the most times? Let's see what.
Okay. Howard Kendall. Everton.
I feel it's going to be in a lot of these lists with managers. Speaking of which, they lost 2-0 to Aston Villa this weekend. Very unfortunate for the Toffees. I did not watch this match. I know our friend Juggs and Paul, who Juggs is an Everton fan, and Paul were texting through it. Seemed like an electric match, apparently, from their text. And Everton apparently was pretty hard done from some decisions. But, hey, can't deny Unai, baby.
Okay, actually, all right, update. Martin Allen, the Barnett manager, has returned to Barnett 12 separate times. So that right there.
Holy
he has gone.
Fuck.
Yeah. He was, all right, his longest spell was.
That seems toxic. That's like a toxic, like, breakup with your ex. Like, you just keep going back. You get drunk and having one night stands with your ex over and over again. That seems a really toxic relationship.
His longest fucking spell was 2.5 years. His shortest spell was 3 games. And 3 games spell happened 4 separate times.
Wow.
This guy's killer. I love this guy. All right. His nickname was also Martin Mad Dog Allen. So fucking in love already, dude.
Wow. Where's the 30 for 30 on this guy? I want to know.
For real.
Okay, let's talk about some of the matches on Saturday. We can kick it off with Leicester-Arsenal. Arsenal 1-0 goal victory over Leicester. I can't use my words. Gabriel Martinelli scoring the goal. We had a goal taken away from Trossard. VAR always wants to fuck over Arsenal. Yada yada. You know I'm an Arsenal fan. You know what I want to say. VAR, they're out to get us blood. Blood, bruv. They hate us.
It's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy. I put my tinfoil cap on. But doesn't matter. This does feel like there should be more excitement over this victory because Leicester are a good... They're coming... Leicester started off like dog shit in the beginning of the season, Martin, but like have really... had a resurgence. And it feels as though if Arsenal would have dropped points, either a loss or a draw, it would be, we would be on here being like, are Arsenal out of the title race? Like we would be doing the same song and dance, but I don't feel like we have that same like feeling as though like, wow, Arsenal still holding, we're still top of the table. Still, I think what, 2 points ahead of City at the moment. I haven't checked.
I'll pull it up. I got the Leicester City. I think that, you know, I kind of talked about this earlier.
Yes,
great points, teams, yep. Winners fucking win. And this was another game where, you know, Arsenal plays Leicester City last year. This is an entirely different result. You know, Tottenham plays Leicester City this year. This has the chance of becoming an entirely different result. But when you watch games like this, whether you're an Arsenal fan or a rival fan like myself, Manchester United, there's a quote unquote title race going on. You watch these games and you feel it. You know it. You know Arsenal is going to win. Even if they are not playing good, even if Leicester City is giving them the worth in the defense, fucking Faust, not playing against himself this fucking game. So the Arsenal actually had to play 11 players. But Arsenal was destined to win this game from the outset. And that's what great winners do. And this Arsenal squad, I've said it, before in separate pods. This is the hallmark of winners. And this is why I think this Arsenal squad has a great chance of becoming victors this year.
Yeah, I definitely think Leicester had a pretty good game plan for the first half. But then after that goal, and then like Arsenal was just, I don't know, just so relentless in the final third of Leicester, just holding so much possession. And like this easily could have been like a 3-0 victory for Arsenal, but held on defensively. I mean, it didn't really seem like when you're bringing Jamie Vardy on late in the game and you're like, this is your victory. And like, we have a very soft spot. We've talked nothing about how much we love that Red Bull Coke snorting motherfucker and how he's a Premier League legend.
He's like 35 now. He's like my dad. I've always looked at him like my dad. He's my dad now.
Yeah, he's my daddy.
And he is 1987. He is 36. He's 36. Give him fucking credit. My God, he just turned pro like 5 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, I just think it was a much needed victory for Arsenal. Obviously, when you're in the title race against Manchester City, every point matters so fucking much. But yeah, I mean, there's just players on this team where it's like Iheanacho, I don't think he's the guy. Barnes had a few good crosses in the match. I don't know. When you don't have your best player out there, James Maddison, it's going to be a tough day. So let's move over to, I don't know, Man City beating the shit out of Bournemouth. Thanks for showing up, Cherries. Thanks for helping me out in the title race. Nope.
Right.
Thanks for nothing.
Eddie Howe would never lose 4-1. I just want to fucking put it out there that I think this is the worst Pep has ever been there. I know this is a super fucking brave statement, but this is the worst Manchester City has looked in about 5 years. At least since Pep's first year in charge of Manchester City. And I quite genuinely think that he's tinkering too much. He has all the talent in the world, both on his bench and on the field, and he keeps pulling dumbass shit. And obviously in games like this, when he's playing the likes of Bournemouth, it's not going to affect him as much. But however, and I'm going to pivot a little bit. When he plays in the Champions League, he does this same type of shit, where he's playing a flat four midfield with Jack Grealish, Gundogan, Alvarez, and Phil Foden.
Philly.
And it's a flat four, and he's got two holding midfielders behind them, and then a back three. And it's a weird fucking formation, but he pulls this shit at the most inopportune times, where you have to go to Red Bull Leipzig and get a fucking victory to get at least a comfortable fucking second leg. Fucking boggles it. He did it 2 years ago against Chelsea in the Champions League. He's done it again and again and again this season alone. In the Premier League. And yes, I do want to reiterate. Yeah, he shit fucked them. Bournemouth never had a fucking chance against them.
And but Bournemouth are getting relegated. Like, we can
absolutely,
just say,
absolutely. But he takes this exact same tinkering mentality to the likes of Arsenal, to the likes of Manchester United, to the likes of Chelsea, Tottenham, Liverpool, Newcastle, whoever. And it seems the more he tinkers, the worse it gets. And I do want to say something real quick, and I'll be ridiculed about it, but I do not think you can admit Haaland has made this team better. And no. I want to put emphasis on this team. I do not think Haaland has made this team better. I think Haaland is a fucking phenom. I think he's the best striker this world has fucking seen.
I think the team,
but he has not improved this team.
I think the better way to put it is Haaland hasn't helped the team. The team has helped Haaland tremendously with the amount of chances he's getting. Not to say that, like, he was a bum before Manchester City. Obviously not. He was a fucking phenomenon at Dortmund. But, yeah, I mean, I've heard out of the mouth of Man City fans that if they kept Zinchenko and Gabriel Jesus, they'd already been way ahead of Arsenal at this point.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
And I think not even just Man City fans or other people, they would just be like, there'd be more cohesion. And everyone, you know, be under, because you have to change your system so much when you bring in a player like Erling Haaland, which, again, like, if Arsenal or Manchester United were still doing their developing years or whatever, this title race would be over because Chelsea and Liverpool are floundering. But, like, now Pep is like, damn, I wish this 1 year everyone would have taken off because I needed some time to, you know, work with this in the oven. He hadn't let this bake enough in the oven, which, again, he's still having, they're only 2 points behind Arsenal and still having a great season, but the Premier League has been so a game of centimeters. But yeah, they kicked the shit out of Bournemouth. Not much to add there besides Erling Haaland gets back on the score sheet. Gundogan looks fucking awesome. Phil Foden also on the score sheet. And Julian Alvarez, who, again, I loved in the World Cup. I think he's a phenomenon. And I feel like he was like, fuck Haaland. Like, okay, well, I'm going to go to the World Cup and possibly, like, I think he could have had an argument for best player of the tournament, but obviously he was going to go to Messi. Messi was the best, but I feel like who would have been like the second or third person? I think you could have made like an argument for Alvarez. So, go ahead.
I just want to end it with, I think that Manchester City has, obviously we're negatively talking about Manchester City after thrashing Bournemouth 4-1. And I think that, we should reiterate the point that we don't think Manchester City is anybody to fuck with. I still think that they are probably the best team in English Premier League football right now. I wouldn't fucking bet against them against anybody in the world or fucking in the Premier League on any given weekday. These are just our fucking thoughts. After watching the dominance of Manchester City for the past 5 years, when the best player in the world comes in, you expect them to be firing on goddamn 13 out of 10 cylinders, not 8 out of 10 cylinders. So it's a little bit fucking weird to see that. And you know, just to kind of get everybody together for the last couple games, I want to talk about the relegation zone. We're talking a lot about the title race and how we actually might have a title race going on this year. But I think I'd be remiss if I did not bring up the most fun relegation battle that we've had in a minute.
Whoa!
I know Kevin and I always pivot at this point in the year, straight to the relegation battle, and that's where 80% of our fucking title talk. Yeah, right now, we got to balance this shit out. We're talking way too much about the title. Let's get to the baddies. 20th through 13th place is separated by 7 points. At any given moment, anybody can fall into the relegation. Anybody can climb out of the relegation. I think in the last 2 weeks, four different teams have been in 18th position, while Southampton and Bournemouth just fuck each other over for the final two spots in the relegation zone.
Well, this was
is fun.
This was a massive weekend for the relegation battle, Martin, because you had West Ham out of nowhere, it felt like, scores four goals against Nottingham Forest, who, again, Forest just came from just drawing Man City.
Right,
and then
right.
You have Leeds miraculously getting their first victory since I think it was November against Southampton, which is a wild statement within that. So the big losers of this weekend were Everton and Bournemouth, obviously, and the big winners were Leeds and West Ham. I mean, those 3 points from both those clubs, I think we're going to be looking back at this weekend if they do not get relegated. I think this will be a big week. What is this, week 25?
Week 25. We're going into week 26. Obviously, there's a bunch of teams that are a couple weeks behind, but we are technically going into the 26th week.
Yeah. So I think my prediction at this point is there is going to be a blue blood, a big, big name team that will get relegated. If it be Everton, if it be West Ham, if it be Leeds, I mean, Leeds technically, Everton and West Ham have been more staples the past decade or so. Leeds only getting back the past couple of years. I don't know. What are your thoughts? I think the guarantee right now is probably going to be Southampton and Bournemouth. But then again, anything can change week to week. Do you have at least one where you're like, lock it in, they're going down? I feel like Bournemouth is probably a good one to lock in.
I feel like Southampton is my lock in. However, I want to double down on what you said. I think we're going to have an OG go down this year. And I am going to discredit Leeds from the OG group. I'm going to go with more established
teams.
You said. I'm feeling one of the, this is obviously an easy four to pick, but this is one of these teams I feel is going to go down. I think Leicester's going to go down. I think Wolves are going to go down. I think West Ham's going to go down. I think Everton's going to go down. One of those fucking teams I just listed, I think, is going to be sucked into the black hole, right into the championship.
Who will be most affected by it?
I think West Ham, Everton, or Leicester. I think Leeds and Wolves can bounce back easily. Leeds more so than Wolves, but I think Leeds can bounce back easily.
Who's it the most good for? Like, you're eating, take your medicine. I feel like Everton. I feel like, take your medicine, Everton. You've been just fucking up. If you look at the money Everton has spent over the past 10 years, it's pretty comparable to the big six. And the fact they're in a relegation fight right now is crazy. I think they've spent over 500 million or something. Like, it's absolutely astronomical, and I think it would be a good time, because they do have bad ownership, to really take a big self-reflection.
I'm going to jump on, and I say, for their comeuppance, I say we send West Ham down. They got big britches. Those 2 years when David Moyes looked pretty good. They're like, yeah, we're going into Champions League. Oh, we're in Europe again. We're West Ham. We're the Hammers. Yeah. So, you know what? Fucking, you got too big for your britches. Get back into the championship. I feel like as a confederation, as a unified confederation, we should have a democratic vote and said West Ham down.
Wow. No love.
I also like Everton. And I like the Wolves. And I like Leicester. I don't care about West Ham.
I love the Irons. One of my best friends, Brian, he's a huge West Ham fan. I would hate for him to be stuck watching ESPN Plus each week.
I still might be there if Manchester United ever completes this sale.
Right.
We're kind of in a fucking, like, Manchester City breaking every single fucking soccer rule there has ever been.
Oh, yeah.
In a purgatory. We're in a purgatory, dude.
Why is everyone in purgatory right now? Let's name the things that are in purgatory right now. Ivan Toney. What's going on there? In purgatory, 1,000 accusations, 10 million accusations, Manchester United being bought.
Donald Trump.
In limbo. The Mason Greenwood thing, which we haven't even mentioned.
Yeah. Okay, that's Thomas Partey. Ronaldo.
Well, no, I meant like kind of right now. Ronaldo's kind of older. Thomas Partey, I think, again, like what he did allegedly is fucked up. And if it's true, I feel like I'm always having to be like dancing.
I just put you in an awful spot every time I bring up Partey.
I'm like, fuck, he did so well. By the way, he may be the worst human being. what a 10 out of 10 performance by Partey.
It'd be like if Hitler was a great soccer player. Hey, baby. I am so sorry you came in at that moment. Sorry.
Apparently, he was a good painter.
So, okay.
Okay. Martin, is that the end of the pod? Are we ending now?
I think we're ending now.
All right. That was our episode. I don't know what happened. All right. Bye, guys.
I'll be your dream. I'll be your wish. I'll be your fantasy. I'll be your hope. I'll be your love. Be everything that you need.
I love you more with every breath. Truly, madly, deeply do. I will be strong. I will be faithful. Because I'm counting on a new beginning. A reason for living. A deeper meaning. I want to stand with you on a mountain. I want to bathe with you in the sea. I want to lay like this forever. Until the sky falls down on me. And when the stars are shining brightly in the velvet sky, I'll make a wish and it to ever remember you on the cry. The tears of joy for all the pleasure and the certainty that we're surrounded by the comfort and protection of the